And we can also use double diagonal lumbar sheathing. So basically, its capacity is going to be double. Very simple, might be a more symmetrical system. Engineers are also interested in the shear walls with opening. But we know that the existence of openings will significantly reduce the shear capacity of the shear walls. But we need to design this kind of openings because we need, sometimes architecture need large openings for windows and doors, right? It looks much nicer to have large openings. But as engineers, we need to how to handle this type of situation. There were four methods to deal with perforated shear walls, or another name, shear walls with openings. We just ignore the existence of openings. We only consider the full height of shear walls. So the sheathing from the bottom of the walls up to the top of the walls. We only consider that amount of the width of that shear walls. The second type, there's a Japanese researcher, Sugiyama. He came up with an empirical design equation, consider the amount of openings within a shear wall. So it's basically using a lot of testing data and structure modeling techniques. So give you a rough number, okay, how much amount of openings in these walls, we can estimate and give you some the reduction factor. The third one, hand calculations using assumptions. So in the US, some structural engineers, they design the shear walls, which using the assumption, using certain assumptions. For example, they calculate how much force are transferred between the members. And for the openings, which is a critical part of the shear walls, they need to calculate how much force need to be transferred around the corners of the openings. But there are different methods if they use different assumptions. Usually, it will give you very different results based on the assumptions. Some are good, some are not very good. The last method, you can rely on computer modeling technique using finite element methods. So you consider the individual framing members, the nailed connections, the framing connections, sheathing panels, hold downs, metal connectors around the shear wall openings, like that. So it will give you the most reasonable simulation of this type of system under lateral load. However, in our design code, the current Canadian design code only consider the strength of full height wall segment, right? So life is much easier. You only consider the full height walls. This might be a little bit conservative. However, it's a very efficient design method. Next, I'm going to talk about the diaphragm action. We know that diaphragms need to be carefully designed because it's going to transfer the lateral forces to the supporting shear walls and then to the foundations. Here's an example of a big roof diaphragm. It's more like a truss system for the roof system. So let's look at the diaphragms when it's carrying the lateral forces. It's going to be like this. It functions as a deep beam. So the deep beam, for example, if you have deep I-beam, right? So this is the compression cord, this is the tension cord, so you need to design. And then what do you have? Right? Compression cord, tension cord. And the sheathing panels will experience shear forces. It's simple. If you use the beam theory, you can estimate those design equations, how to design the floor diaphragms and carry the load, the lateral load, using the beam theory. So, under lateral load, these two end shear walls need to carry this lateral load, right? The diaphragm is going to transfer these forces to these two end shear walls. Now, we design the shear walls with full length of these diaphragms. It's good, so the forces can be fully transferred to the end walls. What about this? If you have an opening here, right? You don't have a full length of shear walls. So this amount of forces on this side need also to be effectively transferred to these shear walls. You need to add some additional member. We call this drag strap or drag strut. It's a construction, it's a building engineering term. Drag strut or drag strap to make sure all these forces effectively transferred onto these shear walls. And then, how we define the shear walls is closely related to how do we distribute lateral forces among the shear walls. We might have two examples, two assumptions on the shear wall in plane stiffness. Take two. The first example, if we think that the diaphragm is very flexible, very soft, so the lateral force will be distributed by its tributary area. For example, wall B will carry half of the total lateral force. However, both end walls will carry only a quarter of the total shear forces, right? What about this one? You have rigid diaphragm. The lateral forces will be distributed based on the relative stiffness of the shear walls. In this case, because this wall is only half of these two side walls, two end walls, therefore, it only carries 20% of the lateral load. These two end walls carry 40%. These are very simple way to estimate how the lateral force distributed. However, in a real situation, we might also experience the irregularity layout of shear wall system. The structure is not symmetrical, right? For example, in this case, this wall is much longer and these two are shorter. So first, you need to do is to estimate the center of rigidity based on the stiffness of individual walls. Then, you move this resultant force to the center of rigidity. And you know that there's moment arm here, right? This eccentricity will create torsional moment, and this torsional moment will introduce additional shear forces in the shear wall system. So we have to pay special attention to this type of irregularity layout of shear wall systems. So these are just some calculations. In the case you have this eccentricity, right? First, you can estimate individual forces based on the relative stiffness, and then calculate The torsion components, this is the total moment of inertia. And then, two components come to play for individual shear wall forces. Lateral, just shear forces, and this one comes from the torsional moment. So what if you have this type of U-shape shear wall system, right? Same idea. Try to find the center of rigidity first along this shear wall B. Then you need to move the resultant forces to the center of rigidity as well as this torsional moment. Then an interesting thing happened here. This torsional moment will create shear forces in this X direction walls. You know that if you use the soft floor diaphragm assumption, you won't have this type of the shear forces, right, in wall A and wall C. Now you have it. So you need to consider this torsional effect. If the diaphragm is fairly rigid, torsional moment, shear forces, estimate the shear forces in the X direction walls A and C. And we know that if we design the diaphragm system and the underlying shear wall system, these lateral forces need to be effectively transferred from the diaphragms to the underlying shear wall systems. So we need to use these additional blocking members to make sure the forces are effectively transferred. If these blocking members are not installed, these forces cannot be transferred effectively. So you might experience like a lot of deformations in this type of connections here, if there's no blocking members. So these are kind of details we need to pay attention as a structure engineer. Of course, in the diaphragms, you have these different irregularity. For example, you need the openings to accommodate staircases and elevate shafters. And you will have this kind of in-plane offset. For example, you might have some, architect might have some different layout, right? And then you might have this L-shaped diaphragms, right? So all these irregularity needs to be carefully designed. When it comes to the design of diaphragm, considering the effective load transfer between the diaphragm systems and the shear wall system and to foundation. So you have to have a very clear mind on the load path and how these forces need to be transferred effectively and efficiently. For example, these openings. You need to design the reinforcing for the openings. It looks ugly, but you have to do that, make sure these lateral forces can be effectively transferred around the corners. Pay special attention to that. And if there's large openings, when you design the top cord, this compression cord, tension cord, you have to consider the effect of the openings. It comes to play in this additional term, right? This is the simply supported beam theory comes from, right? And here, another beam theory, but the boundary condition is different. It's not simply supported, right? You look at this coefficient. So you have to also consider the tension in the cord B. So these are kind of a concept Like as a structure engineer, you have to have when you design different structure members. So you use basic knowledge in structure mechanics. So you can estimate, you can get reasonable solutions for the design. So here's just one example. Look at this building. I can imagine how many offsets, irregularity existing in this type of building. But people like it, right? So as an engineer, we have to find a solution how to design this type of building. So for the offset, for example, we can use some rule of thumb method based on the experience. For example, when the offset is less than 1.2 meters, we just ignore it. However, if the offset is larger than 1.2 meters, we have to consider it. And then, for this L-shaped building, right, you have to consider the continuity of the load transfer. This one, the compression cord, tension cord, what about this? The tension cord is continuous. It's not continuous. So you have to add additional cord members to make sure the force is continuously transferred. So, keep this in mind. The diaphragm acts as a horizontal beam. So we can use simple beam theory to design and calculate the forces need to be carried by those cord members or other members, and the clear load paths need to be provided for shear walls, diaphragm cords, as well as the cord continuation. Next, I'm going to show you, this is the last slide, I'm going to show you how to calculate the deflection of the wood diaphragms as well as wood shear walls. So, the wood diaphragm is carrying the lateral force. For example, there are three components come to play in this equation to calculate deflections. The first one is the basic, using basic beam theory, right? Top chord, bottom chord, under bending, you estimate the deflection. The second part, to consider the in-plane shear, the shear deformation for these sheathing panels. Last one, consider the nailed connections, right? We know that in this system, there are three types of major structure components: framing system, sheathing panels, and nailed connections. So we consider the contribution from individual system, 1, 2, and 3, right? The shear rigidity of the panel, the nail deformation for a particular load per nail, each nail connections, right? Of course, you can find different numbers, these numbers, BED and EN, from the design guidelines. Then, with this equation, you can also estimate the stiffness, the lateral stiffness of the walls and the diaphragms. Now you can decide which assumption you can use, right? You can use the assumption soft floor or roof diaphragms, or you can assume that the roof or floor diaphragm is fairly rigid based on your calculation. It gives you the stiffness, right? So, my last slide, I want to thank you for your attention. Here's my contact information. If you have any further questions or comments, You can send an email to me. So I'd like to, I think we have like 5 minutes. I can accommodate for some questions if you would like to ask. Okay, very nice. Oh, you are so kind to your Tongji, because I also graduated from Tongji, right? So I really thank you for your kindness. Didn't ask any tough questions. And it doesn't matter if you have any further questions, just send me an email. Or ask my friend Xiaobing, he can handle all the questions.
请大家跟我一块再次感谢这个李博士给我们的精彩的谢谢。